Okay, so we were discussing again Bishalakim. So again, quick summary of where we are, and then what the next step is. So we said that Chazam made a takana that you are not allowed to eat from food that is cooked by a non-Jew. We had a machlokas whether that is because of the closeness that it could potentially create, or if it was because of a concern that they may mix in non-kosher ingredients. And we said that lahalacha, our bigger concern is that is the closeness that it's going to create. So even if it's in some sort of what we'll call a sterile environment, where we know that no non-kosher ingredients are going to be able to get in, it is still going to be forbidden. Then we saw that there were two exceptions to this rule. The first exception is that something that can be eaten, ne'echol kemos shulchai, something which can be eaten raw, then even if it is cooked, it is not going to be forbidden. So if a non-Jew would bake an apple for you, since an apple is eaten raw, it would not be forbidden. What's the logic? So again, if we're not concerned about adding lard to the apple or something like that, then our concern is that it's going to the person is doing something extra nice for you. The assumption is that if it was raw to eat, I could have eaten it anyway, so it's not going to create the same closeness as if they took something that was inedible and made it edible. So again, it has to be, in order to be subject to Bishlakim, it has to be something which cannot be consumed unless it is cooked. And then the second category is that it's only going to be forbidden if it is what we call ne'echal al shulchan melachim. If it is something which would be served on the royal table, we call it the state dinner, it has to be something which is chashuv, something which is important, with the same logic, right? If the person's not doing something which they would potentially serve at the White House or serve in a fancy restaurant, it's not that significant, and therefore we're not afraid that it is going to create this sort of closeness. Again, we had larger discussions about how subjective it is. Does it depend on what the king is going or the president would eat in his private, breakfast versus the state dinner? So again, it seemed to be the consensus was that only things that are served at a state dinner. We saw some quotes from the Star K from the White House chef. That's basically what we saw so far. The next exception is as follows. That's the question, which is very, very relevant, which is Bishul Akum when it comes to liquids. When it comes to liquids. Now, where is this most applicable? Coffee. Can a non-Jew make a cup of coffee for you? Now, let's just take a step back for a moment and think about it. So there are two ingredients in coffee. Water and coffee. Now, coffee is not ne'echal kemos shulchai. The coffee component of it. Right? Again, they can do things to coffee beans to make them edible as some sort of snack, but in its raw form, it is not something which is normally eaten raw. The water is something which is ne'echal kemos shulchai. You drink a cup of water. So now, you put these two things together. What happens? Is it going to be problematic or not? The, for most of us, hopefully less important application is beer, which also is the same. You have the hops, the grain, whatever exactly it is, which is not eaten on its own raw, but the main ingredient is the water. So what is going to be its status? That is the question the assumption is that coffee would be served at a state dinner. Coffee is served anywhere. It certainly is something which is ne'echal al shulchan melachim. Yes?
Is beer made with heat?
Is beer made with heat? I think at some point, yes. I think so. If not, then the question is just
whiskey would do the same thing, and distilling is certainly with heat.
Okay. So then, there are always, again, because of the fact that my brain is working very slowly this evening, we're going to focus on the coffee, which would probably help me a little bit. But it'll be better for me being able to go to sleep if I avoid it. So let's see. Let's look at the. We'll start with the Aruch HaShulchan. So says the Aruch HaShulchan number 25, Siman Kuf Yud Gimel. Vare Kol Rabosein Lukasu. All of our teachers wrote, Dilachein Ein B'Sheichar Mishum Bishulei Akum. that there is no bishul akum when it comes to beer. Why? The kemod hatvua betela lahamayim leinyan bracha demar varchina leshakol hachanam yibetela gabe etzav bishul akum. A very interesting logic. Very interesting logic. How do we determine what something's status is? So sometimes we go with the rove. We go with the majority. But here, it's even more than just the majority. He says when you have beer, so even though usually the rule is that when you have something which has an ingredient from the chamesh mine dagan, right, from the five grains, then even if it is tafel, even if it is the less important ingredient, the bracha is still mizonos. When it comes to beer, that's not the case. When it comes to beer, it is shackles. It's, oh, if it's that butthole, if it's that nullified, that even when it comes to hilchos brachos, we're going to say that it's a shackle, then obviously it is insignificant in terms of the ingredients. In terms of the taste, obviously it contributes. But it's insignificant enough that it's not impacting, it's not informing what the bracha should be. Therefore, the same would carry over to hilchos brachos. So again, what's important is what is he saying and what is he not saying. He's not saying just because it is a lower percentage, right? If he seems to be going a step further than that. I was, for instance, we discussed, I think, a little bit last time. I raised it as a question. I unfortunately didn't have a chance to look into it subsequent to what we raised last time, but it would be relevant to this, is if, let's say, you have bishul akum when it comes to soups. So when it comes to a vegetable soup, so let's say most of the vegetables that are going to be put into the vegetable soup are eaten raw. So you have, you know, carrots, celery, onions might not. That's, we had that issue when it came to something else. So it's a question whether why are we discussing whether it's normal to eat? I don't remember. We had a discussion whether biting into an onion. I don't know. We had a discussion like a year ago. I don't remember exactly why we were discussing it. I think we assume, generally speaking, that's not considered to be something which you eat in raw. In fact, in Hilchos Brachos, if you take a bite out of an onion, it's a shehakol. It's a shehakol, not a hadama, because it's degraded, because it's not normal for the bracha. But whatever it is, you put in, I can't think of all the things you would in vegetables. You put in all those vegetables, fine, and you put those in with water. But let's say you add potatoes to it. Again, we had a discussion last time about whether potatoes are ochal nechal shulcham alachim or not, but they certainly are not eaten raw. They're certainly not eaten raw. But let's say it's only a little bit. So what happens in terms of bishul akum? So I don't have the answer to that question. I have to finish looking into that. We'll get there, hopefully. But that would be a question of if you have one ingredient and the percentage is low and it's mixed in, do we say some sort of nullification? This is a step further than that. Right, this is saying not just that it's low percentage, but that normally when it comes to the bracha would go after the mizonos, and here it is not. That further indicates that whatever is happening is insignificant. And we understand that there's a difference between the two, because the coffee is certainly true, and I think it's true when it comes to the hops as well, is that there's solace afterwards, right? There's the crumbs, the sediment or whatever you want to call it. There's the stuff which is left behind. Dregs, good. Dregs, whatever. The whatever is left behind, it doesn't really come in. You're pulling flavor out of it, similar to the tea bag. Right, you have the tea leaves are left behind in the bag, and the flavor comes out. So it seems that we're saying is far more comparable to that. V'chein, now the important line, says the Archaj, again, the svar he's now laid out. V'chein mutter lasos coffee v'shokolad below chalav b'pnei shebatol ha'mayim. And therefore it is permitted to drink coffee and chocolate without milk. I'm not 100% sure what he's talking about. Is he talking about
cocoa?
Cocoa. Hot chocolate, like just taking the cocoa beans and maybe. I don't know what they did in the Aruch HaShulchan's time with chocolate. It certainly wasn't Hershey's.
Does he mean coffee and chocolate together?
No. I think he's saying two different extrapolations. So again, so whatever the mitzvah is, so the coffee we understand. So you take the coffee and you have again, the real coffee for now. You have the coffee grinds, and then the water is going to be processed with it in some sort of way. The grinds are left behind as waste, and the flavor comes out, and you have yourself a nice geshmaka cup of coffee. You know, El Al happens to make really good coffee. I had extra this morning because I knew it was the equivalent of 3 o'clock in the morning here. So if that's the case, then we have a very important kula, is that in terms of the, again, if it's just coffee and water, you can get that from anybody, anywhere. Now, again, in terms of kalim and things like that, you potentially have to be careful. That's not our Bishul Akam topic. But if you're having it in, a exclusive coffee pot, or you know where the coffee pot was from, and it's going into a disposable cup, you can get that cup of coffee from anybody, doesn't matter who. It is not subject to Bishul Akam, even though coffee is not Nechal Kemoshu Chai. Very, very important. Cool. And again, the Aruch HaShulchan, who's not afraid of kulas, says, right, Kol Rabo Seinu Kaso, everybody, no detractors. Is that possible? Probably not. We'll see as we go on. So says Rabbi Vadya like this. His question is, Ha'im Mutalichos Kafesh and his Bashalai de Goy? Or Yetzim Mishumasir Bishul Goy? The same question. What's the status of coffee? So he writes, B'Masechas Havarazar Armino Kol Dover Shnechok Moshu Chai. Anything which is eaten when it is raw, ain't no mishum mishuliakum. It's not subject to bishulakum. When we tam zem, because of this, mutter lishlos mayim roschim shir sichem goy. Right? Just take a step earlier than the coffee. You want a cup of tea and you have your own tea bag and the nanju cooks the water for you, boiling hot water. Is that a problem? It's obviously not because of this Mishnah. The Mishnah says if you can eat it when it is raw, then the guy hasn't really done anything. Nobody's added anything to it by cooking it. Because it was edible or potable beforehand. Beer is the same thing. Even though you can't eat the wheat or the hops when they are raw. Okay, he fleshes out a little bit more of what the Aruch HaShulchan said. Umikan Yesh Lomos Rabbi Vadya also says, Gam Leinina Kofi. Shafa Vishena Kofi Nechol Chai Mikomoko Me'acha Shakofi Tofel Gabe Maim Linin Shazarach Varcha Shesha Kofi Shakon Nevizvaro. Right, even though the coffee beans grow on a tree. And that is probably, the drink is probably the most normal way of consuming coffee. In which case, if you were going Hilchos Brachos using the coffee as the ikar, you would make a Bori Priya Eitz. It's parenthetical, but it's an interesting question. What the bracha should be on orange juice? Why? Okay, the halacha is that if you have the juice of a fruit, so it's downgraded in its bracha. However, if the main usage of the fruit is for the juice, then it maintains its bracha. Now, the question becomes, statistically, what are more oranges used for, which isn't simple, but it's actually more complicated than that, because the oranges that they use for juicing are a different type of orange. Those oranges you would not. Whatever Tropicana does with their oranges, it's very good when it's in juice, but apparently, if you would eat those oranges, you would not enjoy it as much as a nice orange that you get somewhere else. Should that impact the bracha and the bracha be bor per eitz?
Maybe you have
the same thing with grapefruit. Yeah, so maybe we'll drink grapefruit juice?
Yeah.
Sure.
Are
you kidding?
Okay, good. So you make the same argument with grape juice. Either way, I don't know. It sounds good. But we assume the halacha that we assume that it's shakol anyway. But again, the bigger kasha of all these, once we're on the tangents about tochos brachos, is what bracha do you make on a chocolate bar?
Because the bean is made of...
The bean grows from the tree, and that's the only way that is eaten. Rav Shlomo Zalman writes that he has absolutely no idea why we don't make a Bori Priya Eitz on chocolate. He says it does not make any sense in Hilchos Brachos. It is the main use of the cocoa bean, cacao, whatever you call that thing, I don't know, is to be made into some sort of, again, the cheap milk chocolate ones, you could say it could be that a majority of it is milk and it's sugar and other stuff. So maybe that's not. But if you have like a pure, you know, higher end chocolate, then it makes no sense in Hilchos Brachos why the bracha is not Bori Priya Eitz. Rav Shlomo Zalman said, okay, but the minhag must make shehakol. Doesn't sound like he's willing to change, but again, he can't justify it. He can't justify it. And it seems like it's not justifiable. Because again, that is the main usage of the cocoa bean. All of that was completely tangential. But back to where, but again, it's related. Yes?
I just ask a question about the mitzvah of the question here. Like, are we defining bishul? Because the reason why I ask that is because coffee, I thought the reason why it's mutter to drink it on Shabbos is because the beans are already cooked. So there's not bishul.
We are going to get a little bit to that question of the of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul when it comes to there. I'm not 100% sure what the metzius that they are assuming is, but either way, if they're cooking the water and they're creating something new, it still may be that it's problematic. But again, but you're right. It might depend exactly on what they used to do with the coffee bean beforehand. When I was looking for a certain maramakam before, I saw an entire article in this Chakira journal on the history of coffee in Halacha. I didn't have a chance to read it, but it looked fascinating. And it didn't have the maramakam I was looking for, but it popped up online when I was searching. But you're right. If it was fully cooked in that form, then certainly yes. But again, we're changing forms. I'm not 100% sure how that plays out. But we're going to get more to that question a little bit later. Good. Umamela's back inside Rabbi Avadia. Umamela ain't is just a coffee minyan bishuli goyim. Good. Bisikum. In summary, muta lishos coffee shogayim bein lachu belisim bishul goyim. Good. So Rabbi Avadia agrees with the Aruch HaShulchan. So now we've saved Ashkenazim and the Sfardim. Everybody can have a good cup of coffee. V'kosu ha'achrum shekein pshat ha'minog b'chol ha'makomos. V'im ha'locha ro'fefes b'yadchad seyirei hechasir v'nogim v'nohokein. Okay, I guess that's a good rule in general. If you're not exactly sure what the halacha is, go see what the people are doing. I guess that's more similar to what Rav Shlomo Zalman said, although I think he knew what the halacha was, just the people weren't doing what the halacha is for whatever reason. V'rotzel ha'achrum l'atzmo, tavlo bracha. Good. If you want to be machmir, then you can be... then you could be machmir. Here, now we have a very interesting caveat from the Chassam Sofer. This was the maramakam that I was trying to see inside, and I did not have a chance to look it up inside before we began. So I'm gonna hypothesize what the Chassam Sofer's logic is, but for some reason he doesn't articulate it here. He writes, on the other hand, the Chassam Sofer writes that coffee is permitted when prepared by a Gentile, only when the coffee beans do not dissolve in the water. The Shevet Halevi cites this ruling, the Chassam Sofer, as we'll see in a moment, includes that concerning instant coffee where it does dissolve, the Chassam Sofer would be machmir. Therefore, it says that one who is...
It wouldn't serve that in a steak dinner.
Probably not. Probably not. Maybe that would help also. Again, part of what I'm not sure... And this relates to what you were mentioning before, is what the metzius of the coffee was at times of the Chassam Sofer. But therefore it states that one who is lenient has upon what to rely, but a God-fearing person should be stringent. My guess is that if the coffee is... If the coffee dissolves, and again, there may be a scientific or metzius issue with the svara, but my hunch is that what the Chassam Sofer was saying was that if the coffee dissolves, again, I don't think it's possible the Chassam Sofer in the 1800s had the instant coffee that we had. So I don't know exactly how his coffee was dissolving. I would assume that the svara to be machmir is like what I was suggesting beforehand, right? The difference between the case of when you have potatoes or something like that, which is one ingredient which becomes part of the food and it cannot be eaten raw, but now it's part of that whole, versus the coffee where you're pulling out flavor, but the coffee itself still exists separately, that we're distinguishing between those cases and we're only willing to be lenient when you're pulling out the flavor, so it's like super butel, because it's just the flavor and everything remains separate. So if it dissolves, you can no longer say that logic. If it dissolves, then it's much more similar to where one ingredient is, and then we have to figure out, is there going to be a bittul in such a case? What the Rav Vosner seems to be trying to do is to take the jump from whatever the Chasam Sofer is talking about, which again, I don't know what he was talking about. Again, I don't think he could be talking about our instant coffee and say that instant coffee should be the same. But instant coffee, for a variety of other reasons, is I don't know, so processed and everything else. I'm not even sure that it would that the Chasam Sofer would say that. But let's see what he says inside. Yeah.
So this is almost totally different than Tom Kinnicker that we were talking about with Blias. And back, I don't know, a few weeks ago.
In some ways, yeah. The point that you're making is that we were assuming that once you have the tam, that's going to be the same as if you have the ikar. So why should we make the distinction that we're suggesting over here? The flip side is that clearly, or not so clearly, but logically, one could distinguish and say that the isir here has nothing to do with tam. It has nothing to do with tam. It has to do with the closeness which is going to be created, right? It's not a tam of iser, and therefore, the same way you can have a food, you could have the guy cooking, two different pots in front of you right now. One of them is going to be usher, one is going to be mutter, because this one has things that can be eaten raw, and this one does not have things that can be eaten raw. So how does this weird in-between category, where it is, but it's not really becoming part of it, how does that fit into that gzera? So I think you're right. It is different, but I think it makes sense that it's different. Now, once it becomes usser, so then maybe we'll get into tam k'ikar. Meaning, we haven't discussed that yet. If the guy does cook something, does that have the status of machalos asuros now? So let's say the guy cooks your chalent with kosher ingredients. Is your pot usser or not? That's a fascinating question with major, major, major implications that come up all the time in people's kitchens, all the time, right? The non-Jew cooked something with my ingredients, with my food in my kitchen. So now the food, we're going to say, is usser because of Bishul Akum. But is Bishul Akum really what we would call an isser in the chevtza? Does the food become like tray food? Or is that I can't eat it? What we call more of like an isser gar, it's on me. With the big practical difference being, is the pot okay? If the isser is only on me, then that has nothing to do with the pot. If the iser, the food, we're saying, halachically the same way you could take milk and meat, which are two kosher ingredients, cook them together, and now they make machalos asuros. Now the pot is going to be aser because the bliya is going to the pot. What do we say about machalos asuros? What do we say about Bishul Akum? So that's going to be something that we are going to get to, because that has major implications when things go wrong in the kitchen in this realm. But let's see what Rav Vosner says, what he suggests over here. So he says, "V'im gain b'nes kafe afa bishin is bashal kvar b'beis charosha." So again, he understands the metzias. It sounds like it's been processed and it's been cooked already in a factory. Adjinasa avaka kafe, until it becomes this powder coffee. Mikom makom zeg lo yoshinu lahatar bishal shel achar kach d'asle v'tam shachasam sofer ka'amar lemala. So again, we don't have the Kamar Lamal, and I did not have a chance to look at the Chasam Sofer in advance. I'm surprised that you can come up with a svar to say that this is so bad. I'm not sure what that svar is, but somehow the fact that the guy is taking something which can't be eaten on its own right now, and even though this was cooked, it's not edible, right? You can't take a spoonful, I think, of instant coffee and just eat it. So it's not edible. Again, I don't think you'll die or anything like that, but I mean, I think, maybe I'm wrong. Do people, can you add instant coffee into things that aren't cooked? I think you can.
Yeah, you
like frosting and stuff like that.
Cakes?
But cakes are baked, meaning it's heated up. Something which doesn't get heated. I think you can. I think frosting sometimes has... maybe they make it into coffee first. So guys, so it's mamish, not, it can't be eaten as is. So, right. So even though it's cooked, it's not really cooked to the point that it's edible. It's cooked to, that's going to be part of the answer to your question. So in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, it may be different than when it comes to the Bishul Akum. Right? Because again, it's not edible. It's not edible. So
it's sort of cooked to be a
process. It's processed, right.
It's not really cooked.
Correct.
The process is cooking.
Sort of. Exactly. But it's not, it's cooked, but it's not edible. I think that's the distinction, right? You can have something, or this isn't a din in cooking. It's a halacha in making something which is not edible in making it edible. So here, I guess that's what he's going to suggest, that the instant coffee is not edible, even though it's been processed. So now, when you put it together, it's becoming part of the drink. You're actually consuming the thing itself, and therefore, according to the Chassam Sofer, who said that by, again, some other similar type of mitzius, I think actually it's true, right? I think that's part of the Shalan HaChashabbos with the Starbucks Via. Starbucks Via is micro-ground coffee. It is a combination, if you look at the packaging, it's a combination of instant coffee together with very, very micro-ground coffee grinds. Somehow, the way that they make it, when you drink it, you don't feel like you're tasting the coffee grounds, even though, and so it's becoming part of the green, even though it's not instant coffee. So it's not dissolved in the same way. So I guess whatever the Chassam Sofer was talking about was more similar to like those, I can't imagine that they were able to micro-grind it in the same way that we do, but some sort of mitzias that was like that. Because again, when you drink that, you don't feel the ich in your mouth. So if it becomes part of it, so then that's a very different question than when you're just pulling the flavor out. Okay, but the Chassam Sofer is still a das yachid. Right? Even though the Chassam Sofer has said it, doesn't mean everybody has to agree with the Chassam Sofer. So you have that you have two snifim lahakel. There are those that disagree with the Chassam Sofer completely and just assume coffee is okay. Coffee is okay. Again, coffee is okay because even in Hilchos Brachos, even if it becomes absorbed, it's not really a question of being the ikar. And even those who agree with the Chassam Sofer, maybe instant coffee is better than whatever he was that he was talking about. Therefore, he says it's not terrible. The Tosfos in the end is the one that suggests this svara that you can, when it comes to the beer, that it can just be, that it's batal to the mayim, to the water. Okay, but the Chassam Sofer said it. So the Chassam Sofer said it. It is kedai to at least pay attention to it. Interestingly, I was looking at this. As he quotes in the bottom of Sefer Kashrus, it says like this. Perek Yates Chavtes, again, it says on the bottom over here. Right, Sheikhar Bira, Einon Bechalos Yabishle Gayim, Kafe Shachar, so black coffee, Ushar Mine Avakos, and other types of powders, Hatzrichos Bishle Vachana, that require some sort of cooking, Einon Bechal HaIsser, are not part of the Isser. And that is going to help, that's going to help probably if a goy makes you hot cocoa also. Right? If you assume that you know that the ingredients are all kosher. Kimochin cafe, te, cocoa, ubivadai cafe na mace, yachol achin lo shesi afilo guy. He says across the board that all of these things are going to be, okay. So whether it's beer, coffee, instant coffee, tea, all of these types of drinks are not subject to Bishul Akum. He adds in the bottom, this is a position of all major kashrus organizations in the diaspora as well. Okay. I mean, I'm not sure that's surprising. Usually we're more make good, but okay. Either way, but that seems to be consistent again, which is an important kula when it comes to catered affairs and the like. When you go to a hotel or you go to somewhere where it's hard enough to get anything which is being done properly with the fish, again, not supervised. Supervised is hard also. Michal was at a it was not in Bergen County and not under any caterer affiliated with the RCBC. It was at a bar mitzvah right before we left, and they had it was a morning, like a, I guess it was last legal holiday, I guess the 26th. Some people were off, like a bar mitzvah bris kind of thing in the morning, and so it was an omelet station, and they ran out of plates, and the guy making the omelets, I guess it was a responsible thing, they turned off the fire under the pans while he went to go get plates. And she was next to the line, and he comes back and turns on the fire. She goes, "Excuse me, you can't turn on the fires." And he's like,
So why didn't they turn it off again and let her turn it on?
At least she was getting involved. They went and they got the rabbi. She went and got the rabbi, and the rabbi turned them back on. But these are easy things that can easily slip by. And again, the rabbi was extraordinarily appreciative. Easily they can slip past. So the more things that we have that are not subject to bishalakum, it certainly makes our lives a bit simpler. Okay, that's in terms of what is subject to bishalakum. What we need to figure out next. What we need to figure out next is, so how do we get around it? Meaning, especially in a commercial setting, whether it's going to, not even commercial per se, but let's say in a restaurant, or even in somebody's house, if they have somebody helping them with the cooking, how are you going to get around it? It is not economically feasible, especially in Chutz La'aretz, to have Jews doing all of the cooking in restaurants. It just doesn't work. So how do we get around it? Let's start with the next part. And there's going to be a major, again, I don't know if we're going to get through this whole part today. It's a very, very important distinction. But maybe we'll at least whet our appetites and get the cogs turning a little bit as to when we have things that are subject. Don't we not be dealing with avoiding it? But let's say we have meat, chicken, things that are really subject to bishalakum, and we know that the ingredients are kosher, but we need to have a non-Jew helping or cooking. What has to get done by the Jew in order for it to be considered to be non-bishalakum or bishal yisrael? So he quotes the Gemara in Lamech Ches on page 76. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah in Lamech Ches says like this: Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, Hinech Yisrael Basar Agabe Gachalim. If a Jew takes just think of a barbecue for a moment. So a Jew takes the meat and throws the meat onto the barbecue. Ubagai v'hafach bo mutter. And then the guy comes and flips it and makes sure that it's just so. That is going to be permitted. Itmar Nami, similarly, Amar Rabbi Brachan Rabbi Yochanan, Bein Shenech Goy V'Hafach Yisrael, Bein Shenech Yisrael V'Hafach Goy Mutter, Ve'Eino Asar Sheitchatsa V'Gomro B'Yad Goy. And he says the opposite will be true as well. If the non-Jew puts it onto the fire, and then the Jew comes, and the Jew, flips it around and makes sure that it's cooked just so, that would also be permitted. It does not matter which part of the cooking the Jew did or which part the non-Jew did, as long as it cannot be Achei Tichaso Gemar B'Yargar. It's only going to be forbidden if from beginning until the end it is done by the guy. Obviously, those words are ripe for interpretation. What is the beginning and what is the end? Right? How do we define the beginning? At what point is it considered to be the end? So the Rambam paskins, v'kol shebishlo Yisrael ma'at bishulo. As long as the Jew does a little bit of the cooking, bein b'tchila, bein b'sof, mutter. Whether at the beginning or whether at the end, it is going to be permitted. V'fichach, therefore, imeniach agoy basar o kedera gabeish. So again, we're shifting here between burners and the grill. Whether the meat is put onto the grates, or the pot is put on top of the stovetop, by the non-Jew. V'hafach yisav ha-basar, and the Jew turns over the meat, or v'hegis b'kadera, he stirs the pat, o'shiniach yisav ha-gamar ha-goy, or the opposite, harei ze mutar. Then it is going to be permitted. Now, the simple understanding of the Gemara and the Rambam is that the Jew has to participate in the actual cooking. In the actual cooking. Right? If the Jew does not at some point touch the meat or the pot, right, it is not going to be enough.
Well, he turns on the flame, he touches the pot.
We don't know anything about the flame. Nobody's discussed the flame. Right? We know a lot about the flame because of the next source. But if I would ask you right now, if the Jew just turns on the flame, is that sufficient? Based on the Gemara and the Rambam, the answer is no. Right? That's not what it says. It sounds like you need to participate in the cooking. Put it on, stir it, something. Putting on the fire at the beginning of the day certainly does not sound like what the Rambam or the Gemara are speaking about. So says the Beis Yosef, number 30. V'arav Rabbeinu Nissim, the Ran in Avodah Zarah says, Gabe Pas, Shalosh Melachos Yesh Ba. There are, when it comes to bread, there are three different activities. D'ishagar Yeshav Afagoy Shari. If the Jew ignites the fire and the Gentile bakes it, it is going to be permitted. Okay. So by bread, we do have this concept of stoking the flame, of turning on the fire. Says the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, v'davka b'pas. That's only when it comes to bread. L'fisha shegiras ha-tanur hi melocham yuchedes bo. Because igniting the oven is much more of an intricate process. Again, especially when it came to their ovens back in the day, when the bread was going against the walls of the oven. Getting the oven just right was a much more bigger melacha than putting on the fire under a pat. But when it comes to other foods, it would be insufficient to just turn on the fire. And he says, V'hachi mucha kulash meisen. That's exactly what the Gemara sounds like. Damrinan shofes es isha kadeira, that the woman puts on the pot. V'arminan hiniach yisrael basra gabechol. We're talking about describing the Jew putting the meat on the grate. U'mashma da'adloka sa'esh b'lechud lo mahani. It does not sound anywhere that lighting the fire alone is going to be sufficient. This is all the Ran. The Ran says there's no room to even question it. There is no way that when it comes to food, when it comes to cooking, that just turning on the fire is going to be enough. And he quotes other sources that support it. Because of what Rabbeinu Yonah Sham, lo yitin anachre machlas asocha, eish afilu shtich yisrael, eitz echo betanur, shein atanur nichsha vashlachas eitz, elefas avas bevad, velo tavshil. Rabbeinu Yonah writes it explicitly, throwing a piece of wood, which is the equivalent of raising the fire, and puts more fuel in the fire, is only enough when it comes to baking, when it comes to bread, not when it comes to cooking. El etzarech sheyitin ha-yehudi esa machlas asocha tanur. You have to put it into the, you have to touch the pan. L'makam ha-rog l'zbash Hashem, somewhere where it can actually heat up. U'mash will defray the ram, kosh again, the chitui ba'or lo mahani, and certainly just stoking the fire, which is even less than adding adding actual wood, is certainly not going to be enough. V'chein kosa v'av rabbi yitzluk bar sheshes, Rivash also says this. Pariskinu kolam aforshin she'en shigeres adonam olam papas. Avashar mizbashim en shigeres adonam vodokas ish maglam miuredes. Ela hanocha davka akalam shemim kein akorcha ha-hipich abosar koi kedibbe ha-rambam. Says the Beis Yosef, the Rambam should be read like we read it. The simple reading of the Rambam and the simple reading of the Gemara is that you have to actually participate in cooking. Lighting a fire is not participating in cooking. This would obviously be a major chumrah. I mean, not a chumrah in the sense that it's not from the Gemara, but in terms of our lives, it would make things much more complicated. Much more complicated. Comes along the Darkei Moshe. Again, we're not going to see this entire section here, but we have to at least, we don't want to leave us hanging without knowing that the Ramah came to the rescue for us. Says the Ramah, V'nirli d'sfir lehu l'chol hani rabbisa, d'chitoy nami asur kimo hadlaka. Uma shamrinan. So again, he's trying to say that the lighting or the stoking is going to be enough. Why? Masha, I mean, big maradim, he bech basar, he gets shari. What does it mean that you'd have to, it sounds like you have to actually do something to the meat? Eino rots lomar hippich begecholim. Tahainu chito, the koya basar, which goes to Rambam. Shemich basar gets begdera shari, arkan lashoni, is quoting from those that say that it's a problem. So again, he recognizes that there certainly are those, and the simple reading of the Gemara is that the meat is that it's referring to the meat. But he quotes from the Ma'aril, from the Chumash Hadeshah, and one of the other Rishonim, that the custom was that when it came to the maids at home, that since Jews are always participating in the stoking of the fire, it is certainly going to be permitted. Certainly going to be permitted. And that we're going to see in a moment is how he paskins. Now, why exactly does the Gemara say it the way that he says it, if that's not exactly what it means? It's a good question. The Rama does quote a third opinion, which is an even bigger kula. Because of Sham B'Shei Maharam, from the Maharam Yod Merk, Demilika Hagoya Ha'esh Me'esha Yisrael U'bishla Tavshel Mutter. As long as even a fire from a fire. So if you have, the Yahrzeit candle going, and then she lights everything from the original candle of the guy, that's considered to be Bishul, it's hard to call it Bishul Yisrael, but not Bishul Akum, that a Jew participated in the cooking. Stoking the fire would be enough, and certainly making the fire is going to be sufficient. This is going to in the end be a machlokas. We're going to have to see between the Ramah and between the Mechaber, which is a major chumrah for Svardim lahalacha over Ashkenazim. When you go into, if you ever go out with a Svardim, they're asking about the Bishul Yisrael. It's because of this. I mean, we'll discuss more of the practical things, but when it comes to the way that our, restaurants are set up, they are not generally set up to take care of Bishul Akum according to the Svardim. We rely very much on the omelets beforehand, right? The Jew turned on the fire. It was actually a Svardi affair. But the just thought about that out. But the Jew turns on the fire, and that is going to be enough. What Rama says is sufficient. But for Svardim, it's going to have to actually do something in terms of being Megis Baka'ara. It's very hard to have Bishul Yisrael for the Svardim without having a Jew working in the kitchen. Because you constantly need to have somebody who is participating.
I've heard that at a Svardi affair, if they do things right, that the kitchen staff and the mashkiah have to allow the guests to go into the kitchen.
So that's the workaround. That's the workaround usually when it's an Ashkenazi hechsher and the Svardim want to be able to eat. Uh-huh. Is that again to rework everything doesn't really work. But in theory, if you're if you let the guy go back and flip his piece of chicken on the grill, then now he's participated in the cooking. And participating in the cooking seems to be, again, we'll have to see it more, but seems to be that you're touching at some point the food or the pot. They're going to discuss the question, what if you put the pot on before the fire? Is that going to be good enough or not? So we'll discuss that as well. I am not here...